A wise man once said that family is a haven in a heartless world. But what happens when your family is the heartless world and you have no safe haven? Meet sisters Caroline Martin, Virginia Wardlaw, and Mary Sneed. They left a long trail of devastation and death of family members from Kentucky to Tennessee and Virginia on to New Jersey, where they were implicated in a high-profile, mysterious death of a young family member. This is the story of the three sisters in black. This is Southern Mysteries.
It's gonna be all right. These ain't dark or troubled times. It's a day like any other day. You got a dark and troubled mind, all right. You hold that baby tight, and I swear if you can hear me, then everything gonna be just fine, all right. All right.
Welcome to Southern Mysteries. I'm your host, Shannon Ballard. Well, the term dysfunctional family, it is such a common one. Some joke about family issues as if joking can ever truly take away pain and disappointment, even grief that comes when you realize that some members of your family aren't to be trusted or just don't want to be a part of your life. For some, the only option is to walk away and realize that family transcends blood relation and is a title given to the people who love you and stand with you no matter what. But for a young woman named O.C. Sneed, her family members were the ones who robbed her of any chance of freedom in this world, and as many believe, robbed her of her life in November of 1909. O.C. Sneed was the daughter of Robert Maxwell Martin and Caroline Wardlaw. Robert Martin was a Confederate colonel who had been wounded during combat and survived. Later in the Civil War, he led a Confederate plot to burn New York City to the ground. He once again managed to survive after eluding capture when the plot failed. Martin then joined an attempt to kidnap Vice President Andrew Johnson. Eventually, he was taken into custody and revealed to fellow inmates he had knowledge of the plot to assassinate President Lincoln and admitted knowing assassin John Wilkes Booth. Martin was released, and after the war, he moved back to his native state of Kentucky. He became wealthy working in the tobacco industry and was able to afford to build a mansion with stables and grounds that took up an entire block in Wilder Park, a suburb of Louisville. He met and married Caroline Wardlaw, and together they had two children, a boy and a girl. Robert Martin's grand house mysteriously burned down, and Martin decided to return to New York to try to recover his financial losses. In 1900, a series of suspicious deaths began in his family. His son fell down steps at the family's home, and the child died a few days later. Robert Martin and his wife collected on a $22,000 life insurance policy on the boy. The family decided to use the money to buy a larger house and moved to Manhattan. Soon after, Robert Martin began to experience medical issues. Within 2 months of returning to New York, his neighbors reportedly heard a crash and groans, and they rushed to the aid of the colonel, who was by this time on the ground and unconscious. The neighbors arrived to find his wife Caroline hovering over his body and his daughter O.C. in tears. The neighbors found it odd that all the wife said was directed to her daughter. She moved in close to her daughter, O.C., and simply said, "Do not speak about what happened." The colonel died a few days later on January 9th of 1901. After the colonel's death, Caroline took O.C. and moved her to Murfreesboro, Tennessee, where they joined Caroline's sisters, Virginia and Mary, who were educators at Soule College. Founded in 1851, Soule College offered a traditional Southern education for women in cultural studies and social graces. The school officials credited the continuing growth and height of the school's success at the turn of the century to the period when Virginia Wardlaw and her sister Mary Sneed were leaders there. These two women were, at the time, two names synonymous with distinction in education, and they had been described by their peers as being brilliant women of fine character and gentle demeanor. One noticeable change in the sisters did happen here at Soule College. All three sisters began wearing black morning clothes with heavy black veils. This is the beginning of the sisters becoming known as the Three Sisters in Black. It seems the family wanted to bring in as many family members as they could to help manage the college. In 1903, the sisters were able to buy the college and welcomed in their sister, Caroline, to manage the school's finances. Caroline arrived in Murfreesboro with her 16-year-old daughter, O.C., who enrolled in the school. Two of Mary Sneed's sons, John and Fletcher, also joined the faculty. Not long after the family had settled in, rumors started swirling about strange activity happening on the college grounds, including the sisters chanting as they roamed the halls of Soul College. There were even concerns over the three sisters in black being involved in the occult. Their behavior became more and more eccentric. 16-year-old O.C. seemed to be suffering from some unknown illness because she was rarely seen within the first year of moving to the college. But some students told parents and faculty they believed O.C. was being forced into seclusion. When enrollment started going down and unpaid bills started piling up, the board members of Soul College made the decision that the three Ward sisters in black needed to go, and they forced them to resign. In 1907, the sisters and young O.C. moved away. Mary Sneed returned to her former home of Oglethorpe, Georgia. Virginia Wardlaw headed to Christiansburg, Virginia, where she became principal of Montgomery Female Academy. Within the next few months, Virginia wrote to her sister Caroline and asked her to join her with her work. Soon, Caroline, again with her daughter O.C., arrived in Christiansburg to work with Virginia. Caroline Martin recruited her nephew, John Sneed, to teach at the academy. John's wife didn't want him to leave his home and family due to concerns over what had happened with his mother and aunts at Soul College. But his Aunt Caroline persisted and begged him to come teach at the academy. He agreed, and his Aunt Caroline traveled to meet him and make the journey to Christiansburg with him. They traveled by train, and at some point in the journey, John jumped, or as most believe, was pushed off the train near Roanoke, Virginia. Amazingly, John survived. Soon after he began work at the academy, he accidentally fell into a cistern. A caretaker was nearby and was able to save John, who was drowning. Weeks later, students and faculty were awakened in the dead of night when they heard screams. They looked out their windows to see John Sneed on fire. His bedclothes had been soaked in lamp oil and caught on fire. John Sneed's luck had run out. His Aunt Virginia called it an accident, but the people of their town suspected something just wasn't right. You see, John Sneed had been insured for a sizable amount of money, and the woman who established the life insurance policy for John, it wasn't his wife, it was his Aunt Caroline. The insurance company opened a brief investigation into John Sneed's death. They ruled it was accidental, and soon after, they agreed to pay out the policy. Caroline, along with O.C., disappeared again and returned to Christiansburg with John's brother Fletcher, who was freshly divorced and now married to his first cousin, O.C. Residents of the community found the marriage as bizarre as the sisters' behavior. For two reasons. They were first cousins, and Fletcher and O.C. seemed cold towards one another. Not the emotion you expect young lovers to display. Rumors continued to swirl about the three sisters in black and their strange behavior. A driver the sisters would hire frequently to drive them to a local cemetery reported that the sisters made him stop at its edge while they walked farther into the grounds. One night, he decided to follow them, and he said what he saw that night made him feel fear that he had rarely felt in his life. In the dim moonlight, he watched the sisters gather around a grave, make gestures skyward, and murmur incantations which he could not understand. All he knew is how it made him feel. He felt a chill, his whole body shook, and he felt that evil was near, closing in on him. And that wasn't the only strange story around town about the three sisters in black. Legend says girls enrolled in Montgomery College would awaken at night to find the black-robed sisters standing on each side of their bed and walking silently away with no explanation of why they had been in the room. This scared many of the girls so much, they packed their luggage and went to the train depot to take the first train home to escape the sisters. Again, the three sisters' presence at a college led to a drop in enrollment due to the students' fear of what these women might do next. By 1908, the college had been overcome by debt thanks to the poor management of the three sisters and the fear of these women. All three sisters in black left Christiansburg, slipping away separately. The three sisters, the Wardlaw family, would make their mark again, this time far away from the South, in East Orange, New Jersey. This is where they would become the focus of one of the most bizarre and mysterious crimes of the 20th century. On November 27th, 1909, police were called to a home in East Orange, New Jersey. A woman, thickly veiled in black, opened the door and identified herself as Virginia Wardlaw. She led police upstairs to a bathroom where they found the emaciated body of the once beautiful 23-year-old O.C. Sneed. She was found nude, kneeling in the bathtub. Police believe this to be a case of suicide due to a note O.C. left behind. O.C. had been living in this run-down home with her husband Fletcher. A janitor told police that despite their obvious financial struggles, O.C. and Fletcher seemed happy despite having lost their first child the year before. They seemed happy until several months later when witnesses say two older women dressed in black came to visit and stayed. After that, Fletcher left, abandoning O.C. because, as he would later say, he was frustrated by the women who invaded his home. 5 months later, O.C. had given birth to a baby boy, David, who was ill and had to be hospitalized. When she was alone with her doctor, O.C. had told him she was being starved to death by her mother and aunt. O.C. begged her doctor for help, but was never left alone with him again. The doctor would visit and find O.C. anxious and seemingly wanting to tell him something, but he said her mother and aunt would not allow O.C. to talk to him for more than a minute or two and would not give her the medicines he prescribed for her. They wouldn't even allow him to remove the stitches from an operation he had performed on her. And that brings us back to a bathroom in O.C. Sneed's home on November the 27th of 1909. A suicide note nearby read, "Last year, my little daughter died. Other near and dear kindred, too, have long gone to heaven. I long to go there, too. I've been ill and weak a very long time now. Death will be a blessed relief to me in my sufferings. When you read this, I will have committed suicide. My sorrow and pain in this world are greater than I can endure." And the note was signed, O.C. Sneed. Police began an investigation into O.C.'s death, and within 24 hours, questions were raised by investigators due to the finding that O.C.'s death had occurred at least 24 hours before it was reported to authorities, and O.C. had drowned leaning over the bathtub with only her face in the water. It was also determined that O.C. Sneed was severely malnourished and debilitated from drug abuse, her Aunt Virginia would tell police. But police had more questions, including the suicide note that was found near her body. At first glance, the handwriting did not appear to match the handwriting of O.C. Sneed that was on other papers in the home. Things just did not add up. Police arrested Virginia Wardlaw and charged her with murder. As authorities continued their investigation, they spoke to witnesses who saw more than one female figure in black garb enter O.C. and Fletcher Sneed's home in the 24 hours after the death of O.C. Sneed, before police had been notified. Soon, Virginia Wardlaw's sisters, Mary Sneed and Caroline Martin, were located, although Caroline evaded authorities for over 2 weeks. As the investigation continued, police found several papers in O.C. Sneed's home. Many of them were drafts of suicide notes signed by O.C. Sneed, but signed in the handwriting that experts say was clearly the work of her mother, Caroline Martin. Pretrial proceedings were extensive and often disrupted by the outburst and antics of Caroline, always in her black veils and dress. And the media covered every moment with constant updates about the sisters in black in the newspaper every day, referring to the case as the bathtub mystery. Journalists uncovered the long line of suspicious behaviors by the three sisters in black and the suspicious deaths of Caroline's husband and the death of her nephew, John, who was killed back when the sisters worked at Montgomery College in Christiansburg, Virginia. The media also worked to confirm rumors down in Murfreesboro, Tennessee and Christiansburg, Virginia, that there were substantial life insurance policies on OC totaling over $32,000, which today would be valued at over $800,000. And OC had seemingly signed several versions of a will before she died, although no one witnessed her signature. You may wonder what OC had to include in a will, considering the state of the home where she was found dead. Only one cot in that home for a few people to sleep on. Hardly a trace of food. Dirt and filth everywhere. Things just didn't add up. O.C. Sneed owned real estate in several southern states, and in storage in the south, she had furniture that was valuable. Her estate was estimated at about $7,000. That would be worth about $184,000 today. Combine the life insurance policies and her will, and the women who benefited from O.C.'s death, her mother and aunts, would inherit close to $1 million. The death of O.C. Sneed and questions around her family made national news, and Virginia papers were very interested due to the family's connection to their state. On December 7th of 1909, a Times-Dispatch headline read, "Chains of crime may be unearthed, insurance policies heaped on members of Wardlaw family." What followed was an article speculating that the three sisters in black had been responsible for other crimes, and the sisters were in desperate need of money. The article reads, "Insurance companies made public today a mass of evidence which showed that the death of O.C. Sneed came at the very moment when the Wardlaw family was about to be overwhelmed with a pyramid of policies heaped on various members of the family. It was also pointed out that the body of O.C. Sneed was found dead in a bathtub in a lonely New Jersey home on the very day which ended the Wardlaw family's lease of the home. Not only was the insurance of this girlish woman about to lapse because of a staggering load of loans obtained to pay premiums, but the family was found involved in a chain of insurance on three brothers who were cousins of the dead woman, all of whom have died or suddenly disappeared. Maximum loans have been made on all of the life insurance policies on OC's life. Two, furthermore, were threatening to lapse on account of failure of the payment on premiums. And at the very time that the insurance companies were threatening to wipe out insurance for failure of the payment on premiums, the family was practically starving to death. The Times-Dispatch also reported that just a day before O.C.'s death, Virginia Wardlaw paid the premiums on three $5,000 life insurance policies in O.C.'s name. It also claimed that Virginia had attempted to buy chloroform from a local drugstore and that an investigation by reporters revealed that O.C. lived in constant fear of her mother and aunts. Journalists carried a lot of the weight in this investigation because during the trial, O.C.'s husband Fletcher was found by a journalist, not by police. Fletcher Sneed had fled the city before O.C. was found dead. He was found in a lumber camp in Canada, where he had been working under an assumed name. He had been investigated as a suspect in O.C.'s death, but no incriminating evidence was found against him. Virginia Wardlaw starved herself to death while awaiting trial. A newspaper shared the news of Virginia's death on August 19, 1910, writing, "Death was due, in the opinion of the physician, to starvation. The fate of the aged woman in this respect paralleled that of her alleged victim." Months later, O.C.'s mother, Caroline Martin, went on trial. Despite objections, her lawyers attempted an insanity defense, but the court found Caroline competent for trial. The jury found Caroline Martin guilty of manslaughter, and she was sentenced to 7 years in state prison in 1911. A newspaper reported that upon hearing the news, Caroline caused a sensation by fighting, screaming that her daughter's death was an accident, and finally collapsing in the courtroom. Within a year of her imprisonment, prison authorities claimed that Caroline was insane and transferred her to a state insane asylum, where within months, she died, apparently of natural causes. Caroline Martin maintained until her death that the death of her daughter had been an accident and she was not involved. Eventually, OC's aunt, Mary Sneed, pleaded guilty to manslaughter, and due to the fact that there was no direct or circumstantial evidence of Mary's direct involvement in the death of OC Sneed, Mary was released on a technicality to the custody of her son, who took her back to his ranch in Colorado. But Mary's story doesn't end here. She came forward 17 years later to go public about the story of the sad, and as she referred to it, mysterious death of her niece, O.C. Sneed. She was interviewed by a journalist with a Murfreesboro, Tennessee newspaper. To no one's surprise, there was money involved in this situation. You see, in 1930, a lockbox was opened at the First National Bank of Murfreesboro. Remember, this is where the sisters worked together at Soule College. No one knows why someone at that bank decided to open the lockbox, but when it was opened, the bank employee found three loose diamonds, two diamond-studded gold brooches, a small black pouch, and one fingerless black mitt. Pinned to the mitt was a tag with the name Virginia Wardlaw. The diamonds and jewelry inside were estimated at about $2,000, which would be around $29,000 today. The media once again went crazy over the case of the three sisters in black and the mystery of the content of this lockbox. Who did it really belong to? The sisters? Maybe another victim? Mary Sneed came out of seclusion to claim the valuables inside the lockbox. In an interview with the Murfreesboro News Banner, Mary said she was glad the diamonds had been found and went on to awkwardly explain that the jewels had been stolen by a student she claimed to know but refused to identify. Mary assumed the thief must have had second thoughts and made the decision to deposit the stolen items in a lockbox so that they could eventually be returned. Mary Sneed's explanation was mocked by national media. No one was falling for it. Those who knew the sisters believed the lockbox was an attempt by Virginia Wardlaw to prevent her sisters from squandering the last of the family's wealth. Mary Sneed and two other Wardlaw family members claimed the jewels, but the family owed a lot of money to a lot of creditors from the past, and those creditors stepped up to claim the money to pay off debts. Journalist Ada Patterson referred to the bathtub mystery and death of O.C. Sneed in 1909 as a horrible modern ghost story, more dreadful than the most gruesome of tales, and the motive and the cause was money, meanness. For these three sisters in black, money mattered more than life. That much is known. As to their decision to always be dressed in black, a reporter also had a theory on this choice. Perhaps they mourned for loved ones gone, or for those about to go. Southern Mysteries is hosted and produced by me, Shannon Ballard. If you're enjoying the show, I hope you'll take a few moments and leave an iTunes review. It helps others discover Southern Mysteries. This month, Southern Mysteries is excited to join in the Two Pods a Day campaign. It's 30 days of podcast discovery with two podcasts featured each day of the month. Two Pods a Day offers a wealth of knowledge, perspective, and entertainment. Whether you like mysteries, nature, art, or personal journal podcast, there will definitely be new podcasts you'll want to check out. To learn more and listen along, make sure you follow me on Twitter at MysteriesPod to see daily updates and podcast suggestions. To connect with fellow fans of Southern Mysteries and see photos and articles that dive deeper into the Three Sisters in Black case and bathtub mystery, join the Southern Mysteries Facebook group. Just search Southern Mysteries Podcast on Facebook. I'll be back on April 23rd with a new episode for you. Until then, thanks for listening.
We'll be all right. We're careful what we got to buy. There might be